जय राधा माधव कुंज भारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन, यशोदानंद यमुना तेरा वनचारी यमुना तेरा वनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन, यमुना तीरा वनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशतश्री श्रीमद् डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग। नारायणं नमस्कृत्या नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया। भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 11 टेक्स्ट 21 एंड 22 So what's on the board is 22. Sa yai sprishto abhidrashto va samvishto anugato piva kosalaste yayosthanam yatra gacchanti yoginaha स यै स्पृष्टो विदृष्टो वा संविष्टोऽनुगतोऽपि वा कोसलास्ते ययोस्थानम् यत्र गच्छन्ति योगिनः स यै स्पृष्टो विदृष्टो वा संविष्टोऽनुगतोऽपि वा कोसलास्ते ययोस्थानम् यत्र गच्छन्ति योगिनः स यै स्पृष्टो विदृष्टो वा संविष्टोऽनुगतोऽपि वा कोसलास्ते ययोस्थानम् यत्र गच्छन्ति योगिनः सः हि लॉर्ड रामचन्द्र यैः By which persons? Sprishtaha, touched. Abhidrashtaha, seen. Va, either. Samvishtaha, eating together. Lying together. Anugataha, followed as servants. Apiva, even. Kosalaha, all those inhabitants of Kosala, te, they, yayuh, departed, sthanam, to the place, yatra, wherein, gacchanti, they go, yoginaha, all the bhakti yogis. Translations and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. I'm going to read the translation for text 21. Lord Ramachandra's spotless name and fame, which vanquish all sinful reactions, are celebrated in all directions, like the ornamental cloth of the victorious elephant that conquers all directions. Great saintly persons like Markandeya Rishi still glorify his characteristics in the assemblies of great emperors like Maharaj Yudhishthira. Similarly, all the saintly kings and all the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, worship the Lord by bowing down with their helmets. Let me offer my obeisances unto his lotus feet. Today's verse, Lord Ramachandra returned to his abode to which bhakti yogis are promoted. This is the place to which all the inhabitants of Ayodhya went after they served the Lord in his manifest pastimes by offering him obeisances, touching his lotus feet, fully observing him as a father-like king, sitting or lying down with him like equals, or even just accompanying him. Purport. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, text 9, what does he say? Fantastic. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattvatah tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mameti so arjuna. Quote, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Here, this is confirmed. All the inhabitants of Ayodhya who saw Lord Ramachandra as citizens, served him as servants, sat and talked with him as friends, or were somehow or other present during his reign, went back home, back to Godhead. After giving up the body, the devotee who becomes perfect in devotional service enters that particular universe where Lord Ramachandra or Lord Krishna is engaged in his pastimes. Then, after being trained to serve the Lord in various capacities in that Prakata Leela, the devotee is finally promoted to Sanatan Dhamma, the supreme abode in the spiritual world. This Sanatan Dhamma is also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Parastasmat tu bhavonyo avyukto vyaktat sanatanah. One who enters the transcendental pastimes of the Lord is called Nitya Leela Pravishtha. To understand clearly why Lord Ramachandra returned, it is mentioned herewith that the Lord went to that particular place where the bhakti yogis go. The impersonalists misunderstand the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam to mean that the Lord entered his own effulgence and therefore became impersonal. But the Lord is a person and his devotees are persons. Indeed, the living entities like the Lord were persons in the past, they're persons in the present, and they will continue to be persons even after giving up the body. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Where? Very good. Chapter? Very good. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Sva Padantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a wonderful episode when Lord Brahma, he kidnaps all the cowherd boys, the cows and calves, and hides them in a cave and puts them into a transcendental slumber for 1 year. For Brahma it was a few moments, but it's 1 year according to earthly time. And in that 1 year, or during that 1 year, Krishna expanded himself as all of his friends, all the cows and calves. And every day, all the boys would go out to the pasturing fields, all the cows would go, the calves would go, and they would come back. And that 1 year, all the mothers, all the fathers, all the cows, or the mothers of the cows themselves, they felt a certain kind of joy and attraction to their babies or children that they had never experienced before. And it is very unbelievable how suddenly they were so immensely attracted to their own children. And no one can explain what was going on, why suddenly every mother, every cow felt this unbelievable, indescribable attraction. And so Parikshit Maharaj also asks this question to Shukadeva Goswami, why is this so? And the answer is because each one of them was an expansion of Krishna. Krishna had personally expanded himself into all the boys and all cows and calves, and the mothers were in contact with Krishna directly, unbeknownst to them. So the question was, how is it possible that a mother is more attracted to someone other than her own child? It's not usual. So Shukadeva Goswami answers the question. And he answers the question by saying, that is because every one of us, every jiva, is sourced from Krishna. And when one is attracted to the source, that attraction is stronger than any other attraction that one knows. So we'll come back to this later, because there's a reason why I bring this up. Now the particular verses are glorifying Lord Ramachandra, that his name, his spotless name and fame, yasya amalam yashaha adhuna api. Yashaha means his glory. And amalam means spotless or free from any contamination. The word Rama, it's part of our Hare Krishna mantra, is because the word Rama means the reservoir of pleasure. Right? Isn't there a booklet called Krishna, the reservoir of pleasure? So, in the 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the definition of happiness is given. Or the word that best describes happiness or pleasure is given. And Prabhupada refers to that verse. Ramante yogino anante satyatman Ramante yogino anante something chidatmani iti ram pade naso param brahma abhidhiyate. I forget that one word. Say ramante means they're happy, they're joyful. Yogina, the yogis, specifically the bhakti yogis, anante, unlimitedly happy. Because iti Rama pada, because they say the word Rama, iti Rama pade naso param brahma avidhiyate, because they know that the supreme is known by the name Rama. So when they recite the name of Rama, because the name is not different from the person, they feel a certain joy. And that joy, with repetition, becomes unlimited. So many of us wonder why we are told that in all circumstances of life, whether we are in distress or fear or anxiety or concern or sadness, whatever that feeling is or the situation is, we are recommended to chant Hare Krishna. It is because all of these problems or feelings or emotions are manifest when one is disconnected from the source of love. Mostly anger. We've discussed this in a separate presentation. That when someone is angry, there are many, many methods, lessons on how to curb that anger, how to deal with that anger. Some methods say, take a deep breath, count till 10 before you punch, go punch a tree, punch a pillow, kick the dog, yell it loudly. Kick the dog is a phrase. Yell loudly, whatever, just get it out. That's on this side. Some have other explanations, etc. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, one becomes angry because of unmet expectations. Unsatisfied lust. It's called unmet expectations or unrealistic expectations. Or put it even more flatly, because of expectations. And most expectations in this world are unreal. We expect the world to respond in a particular way to us. It doesn't happen. We expect certain things to respond to us in a particular way, to make us happy. And it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen continuously. It changes. We expect certain people to respond to us in a particular way. It doesn't happen. After some time it changes, or that person's not the right person. So we keep looking. And this looking here and there, is looking for our expectations to be met. And it's not possible in this world. So unsatisfied expectations or unrealistic expectations end up as anger. And that expectation is there, now from Bhagavad Gita's perspective, because inherently we are parts and parcels of Krishna. And that inherent connection is the only thing that will satisfy us. But we take that, or the void of that disconnect, we try to fill with other relationships. Without a spiritual center, without Krishna being in the center. And if Krishna is not in the center, however wonderful that relationship might be, it will end. It will end as a fight or disagreement, or it will end when one of the persons dies. So these unmet expectations or expectations come, it is said, because there is something else behind. So anger is nothing but unmet expectation, and that unmet expectation is because of a lack of sense of love in someone's life. So if someone is loved or feels loved and cared for, then the way they respond to the world is very different. Now, only on a mundane platform. Now, what to speak on a spiritual platform? If we notice in the world, wherever there is an expression of anger, if we dig below the layers, then we find that there is some disconnect from love in that person or person's lives. Some guy will come and shoot in a school, or just go crazy and shoot, you know, his colleagues or people out in the streets. etc. These are all expressions of frustration and anger. Because there's a disconnect. Something happened way back in past. Now, if you take that and extrapolate it, something happened ontologically, that we disconnected ourselves from Krishna. And so, in this world, everyone who's disconnected feels angry, frustrated, feels not sheltered, cared for, etc. That's just the nature of how this world is. That is why in the 6th chapter, text 26, Krishna says, Nasti buddhi ayuktasya. That a one person who's not connected, that person cannot have transcendental intelligence. And one who doesn't have that intelligence, nacha yuktasya bhavanaha, their mind cannot be peaceful. Their mind is very restless. Nacha abhavayatascha kuta sukham. Acha bhavayatascha ashantaha. Such a person is agitated or without any peace. Ashantasya kuta sukham. And how can there be peace? How can there be happiness without peace? So happiness and being connected to Krishna have a direct correlation or relationship. The more one is connected to Krishna, the more one is happy or happier. And that's the verse, Ramante yogino anante. Satya atmane anyway, iti ramapade naso param brahma abhidhiyate. So the more we are connected to the Supreme Lord with the names Rama and Krishna, we are supposed to feel a general sense of happiness in all that we see and do. So when we don't feel it, then that's an indication that our connection either is not strong enough, or perhaps weak, or not even there. We may be going through the motions of it without feeling connected, or without connecting with Krishna. So his name and his fame are spotless. Spotless fame means that there is nothing negative about Lord Ram. Although he banished his wife, sent her away to the forest, although made his wife walk through the fire as a test, etc. These are supposedly negative things. Some people have a problem with Lord Ram for these two things. Yet, Shukadeva Goswami says his character is spotless. That means they understand the transcendental reasons behind Lord Ramachandra's activities. And one who understands those reasons behind these activities goes back to the spiritual world after this life. Janma karma chame divyam. So now, that's how this purport starts. Lord Ram, after winding up his pastimes, went back. Now, a few verses ago, it said, Atma Jyoti. He went back to his own effulgence. And so some spiritualists, they interpret this as he merged into Brahman and became this light, formless thing, just awareness. But this verse says, not only Lord Ram, but all of those who touched his lotus feet, who served him in any way, or Samvishta, who sat with him and behaved like equals, Abhidrashtaha. Abhidrashta means even who saw Lord Ram. They may not have offered some service, just that they saw the Lord. Anugata, those who followed him. Apiva, Kosalaste Yayu Sthanam. So all the residents of the Kosala province, which means Ayodhya, Yayu, they also went Sthanam to the same place that Lord Ramachandra went. Yatra Gacchanti Yogina, and that's the place where the Bhakti Yogis go. So what kind of liberation is this, where they all went to the same place where Lord Ram went? Salokya. Sa-alokya. Sa-alokya means living on the same planet or the same place as the Supreme Lord. So they all got Salokya Mukti. Now, one of the things that the impersonalists say, that everything is Brahman. Everything is spiritual. So the question then is, if everything is spiritual, how or when does something become material? How does something become material? Any thoughts? Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry, I can't hear. Something I heard was connection.
You were highlighting earlier the connection factor. So I take it would be the lack of connection with the Supreme Lord.
So lack of connection with the Supreme Lord. That's from whose side? That's from our side. So everything is spiritual, and material means seeing something as if it's not connected to Krishna. When we see earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego as not connected to Krishna, then those are material. The Krishna says, Bhinna Prakritirte Ashtada. And that it's a very interesting verse, because he starts with Bhumi Aap Nalo Vayuh Kham Mano Buddhire Vacha. That's the 8. Ahankara Itiyam. Sorry, 8 is Ahankara Itiyam. And then he says, Ahankara Itiyam Me, mine, Bhinna Prakritir Ashtada. They are my energies, but separated from me. So it's almost like a paradox. On the one hand, he says they're mine, but they're separated. So if they're his, how can they be separated? So the paradox is resolved that Krishna says that these energies are mine. So from his perspective, they're his energies, and so they're all spiritual. But bhinna is because from our perspective, they seem separated. We don't see the connection with Krishna, and therefore they are material and separated. Okay? They are spiritual, and this is what Prabhupada says, that for an electrician, electrical energy is the same, but he can heat something with the electricity, he can also cool something with that energy. So from Krishna's perspective, everything is his energy, so it is divine. And therefore even the material energy, he says, Daivihi esha gunamai. This energy of mine is divine. So the impersonalists say that everything is spiritual. We also agree. Because we are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we agree that everything is spiritual. But our explanation is even more enhanced. That everything is spiritual, yet individual and distinct. There is variety within that unity. Within that oneness, there is variety. According to the impersonalists or the monists, everything is one, without any variety. There's no variety, there's no distinction, there's no personality. Everything is one. and see, this is what it says, this is according to them, Lord Ram, all the followers, they all merged into this Jyoti, Brahman. If that is the case, then why worship Lord Ram if I know that I am also Brahman? Oh, he is Brahman, I am Brahman. We're equal. So when he cries for his wife and I cry for my wife, I cry because of my wife, but anyway, it's the same thing. It's not. There is such a transcendental gap between the Lord shedding tears for Sita Devi and me doing the same thing. Or why worship Lord Ram? Why does the previous verse say, Markandeya Rishi, even now, after millions and millions of years, is glorifying Lord Ram in the palace of Maharaj Yudhishthira? The reason Markandeya Rishi, one of the reasons Markandeya Rishi is referred to here, is because Markandeya Rishi is one of the Chiranjeevis. Chiram means long time and Jeevi means one who lives for a long time. Markandeya Rishi lives for almost 6 Manvantaras. His life is so long that Manus come and go, but he's still alive. Very special. Actually, this digress is, Markandeya Rishi was cursed to die. And he is a very ardent devotee of Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva appears to him and gives him a special benediction that forget about dying quickly. You will not die at all. You will be there for a very, very long time. And so he lives for Manu after Manu, Manu after Manu. So he's seen everything. That person is glorifying Lord Ram because he's been there. He's been there when Lord Ram was coronated. He's been there when Bharata is about to be coronated. I'm reading the part of Ramayana where Bharata has gone to in following Lord Ram to Chitrakoot in search of him to bring him back. And he has arrived at the bank of the Ganges and is met by Guha, the king of the fishermen and the Nishadas, the tribal men. And Bharata says, I want to know how to reach the hermitage of Maharaj, the sage Bharadwaj, because I think Lord Rama is there. I want to bring him back because he is as good as my own father. And I cannot rule the kingdom. He needs to be the one who should rule this kingdom. And Guha is very happy to hear that and wants to help Bharata cross the Ganges and go to Bharadwaj Muni's ashram. So Markandeya Rishi is sitting in Ayodhya preparing for Bharata's coronation. So he has seen everything. And he says that Lord Ram's glories are spotless. So everyone going back to this transcendental realm doesn't mean they all merge into one being. So Prabhupada is very clear. They all remain as individuals. In Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada gives the example. If a green bird flies into a tree and sits on a branch, from afar, the green color parrot and the leaves of the green leaves of the tree, you can't distinguish the parrot. It doesn't mean the parrot has merged and become a leaf. It means that it's there, just can't distinguish it. So it's all green, true, yet the bird is different from the leaf. You know, when we were younger and we were asked to draw a tree, you know how we used to do? You know, we used to put one triangle that used to be the trunk of the tree and like a clover around it. That's the branches. And we would put one shade of green all over. Remember? That's how, I know, that's how we used to draw or color trees. One smooth green surface. That's the Mayavad's idea of painting. But one who actually paints, you'll see, although it looks like one homogeneous piece, if you observe carefully, you'll see the details of every leaf there. That's the Vaishnava style of seeing things. One and different together. So they all went to one place. But yet Lord Ram remains Lord Ram. And a bhakta remains a bhakta. And so Prabhupada's taking the time to explain. Another thing he explains is, from this realm, the earthly realm, a perfected devotee doesn't go back to the spiritual world in one step. There is a step in between. The Supreme Lord manifests his pastimes in another universe. And in that universe, this perfected devotee gets a chance, an opportunity to participate in that pastimes. And then goes back to the spiritual world. Here, after giving up the body, the devotee who becomes perfect in devotional service enters that particular universe where Lord Ramachandra or Lord Krishna is engaged in his pastimes. Then, after being trained to serve the Lord in various capacities in that Prakata Leela, the devotee is finally promoted to the supreme abode in the spiritual world. It's fascinating to get to participate with the Lord in his pastime. So Lord Ramachandra went back, just as Lord Krishna went back, says in the Bhagavatam, first canto, third chapter, last verse, that Krishna returned to his abode along with dharma, jnana, etc. But he left behind, or another sun arose on the horizon, the sun called Srimad Bhagavatam, the literary incarnation of Krishna. So any thoughts, comments on the verse, on the purport? Giridhari? So before you ask the question, so I said a story about from Krishna book. What's the connection? The connection is, that unless we are connected to our source, we cannot understand how we fit into the grand scheme of things. And in the grand scheme of things, one should become comfortable with who he or she is while appreciating someone else's connection with Krishna, which may be very different. So we've heard this phrase, unity in diversity. So unless one is connected to Krishna, one's ability to see unity in diversity is not strong. And it begins with one's own self being comfortable with knowing that I'm serving Krishna in a particular way, with a particular set of abilities and skills, which may be very different from someone else's. And it's not that we have to be like someone else for Krishna to look at us or glance at us. It is to find strength in our own nature and our own, I guess, identity, or however you call it. It begins there. Then the next step is to appreciate the variety. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm wondering where the relationship with the devotees play in the part with this, like, kind of unmet expectations, and like how our relationship with Krishna is ultimately what fulfills our expectations. And then, so sometimes if we kind of have unrealistic expectations in our relationships with devotees and we don't connect with Krishna, then we meet with this same frustration.
We may have unrealistic expectations from Krishna and be frustrated too. Every time I stand in front of Kishore Kishori and offer a prayer and then I'm expecting that Krishna should reciprocate with me in a particular way, I'll be disappointed. Because Krishna is not obliged, nor does Krishna operate that way. Therefore, the Bhagavatam is filled with stories and pastimes and philosophy about Krishna's character, so that our expectations from Krishna are realistic and not unrealistic. If you have unrealistic expectations from Krishna, we'll be disappointed. Same way, if we have unrealistic expectations from the devotees of Krishna, we will be disappointed. However, relationship with devotees is of a different kind. It is not true that ultimately it's between me and Krishna and the devotees really are just in the middle. That's not how the spiritual world is. The relationship with devotees is special because the devotee sees Krishna as the center of all relationships. And so does another devotee, and so hopefully do I and you. So when we all see Krishna as the center of all relationships, then those relationships are very special. And if one doesn't see Krishna as the center, although with a devotee, then I am to be disappointed. Because I don't see that connection with Krishna, and so I think of this devotee as somehow supposed to fulfill all my expectations. So the frustration is not because of someone else, maybe, but the frustration may be for our own unrealistic view of and expectation from those devotees. Sometimes people have unrealistic expectation from their guru, and so they are frustrated or disappointed. The guru is supposed to do this for me and that for me, and should be there for this and should be there for that. Not necessary. Or whatever is that set of expectation, one should check, is my expectation real or realistic? Not real, realistic. See, the guru, for example, the guru is supposed to act or supposed to give transcendental knowledge, help us become connected to Krishna and detached from matter. But beyond that, if the expectation is that the guru should do this for me, do that for me, give me this advice, give me that advice, although he or he does, it may not be his role necessarily. There's a lot more to say, but so the disappointment or the frustration, whatever it is when we don't see that person's connection with Krishna. And put it positively, when we see every living entity somehow as connected to Krishna and perhaps even an instrument of Krishna, then there is no anger or frustration with that person. One learns to see the hand of Krishna behind. Oh, Krishna is trying to teach me something. Krishna is trying to communicate something to me in a particular way. Sometimes Krishna will teach us through the animals and birds. Sometimes through people walking on the street. Sometimes through devotees. Sometimes from within. But anything that comes from within must always be checked with devotees, otherwise we're not too sure, etc. So it's a journey of self-discovery. Basically, that's what it is. We're discovering who we are and how we are connected to Krishna. And everything around us and everyone around us, every living entity, everything is helping that objective for one who wants to see it. Otherwise, one sees so many clashing priorities and objectives, lessons, and some people don't even get the lesson again and again. Does that make sense to you? Okay. Anything else? Subhal Prabhu.
Appreciating and thinking of that in the verse it is said that the devotees who touch the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra, as well as serving in so many intimate ways, you know, they return back with him. And I was just thinking, the inconceivable opportunity that we have, some of us, you know, at least, even with whatever material condition in different levels, I can speak for myself, and we're given the opportunity to touch the lotus feet of the Lord consistently and serving in so many intimate ways, especially when you do deity worship. And that's one of the descriptions of those who actually going back home, back to Godhead with the Lord.
Mm.
So I was wondering if you can comment about that, you know, observation.
In the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada quotes some really wonderful verses. So one is this definition of the word Rama. In the fifth chapter, there's another reference to a verse, and interestingly, he doesn't give the source of it. But it's, we know that it's a verse that the Lord is speaking to Lakshmi Devi. And it's from his perspective. And the verse goes, Darshana Dhyana Samsparshair Matsya Kurma Vihangamai. And then I forget the next two lines. He's speaking to Lakshmi Devi. Tani aham. I also do the same. So the analogy is Matsya, the fish, Kurma, the tortoise, and Vihangama, the bird. They do something to nourish their young ones. So he says, Darshana Dhyana Samsparsha. The fish hatch their eggs by looking at the eggs, apparently. I never knew that. Only from Vedas we understand. Once the fish puts out all her eggs in the water, they have to be hatched for the babies to come out. So the fish looks at the babies constantly. And by looking at them constantly, the eggs hatch. Dhyana, the tortoise, she lays her eggs on the shore in the sand, but she's in the water. And apparently the tortoise is constantly meditating on her eggs. And the eggs hatch because she's meditating on them. So by thought of them. And Darshana Dhyana Samsparsha, by touch. So the bird, she lays her eggs and she sits on those eggs. By the warmth of her body, the eggs hatch. So his Lord Vishnu says to Lakshmi Devi, similarly, I nourish my devotees. They feel the warmth of my presence by my looking at them, by my glancing at them, by my meditating on them, and by my touching them. It's a fascinating verse. So the Lord is nourishing us. So as soon as we come in His presence, either that He can glance at us or we are somewhere, but we're connected by our thought with Him, or we are actually performing the seva of touching, it is His contact with us that is nourishing us. So we are in a very special place by Prabhupada's mercy and by the mercy of our Guru to have engaged us in this lifestyle, where that opportunity to be within the glands, of course Krishna's glands can go anywhere. As the Paramatma, He is nourishing every entity. But every entity doesn't feel that joy because that entity is not turning towards Krishna. He's feeling the warmth, no doubt. But the joy of the warmth is different when one is also turned towards the Lord. So, the effort of the Guru is to not just, you know, give us a mantra. Of course, all that is there. But the real effort is to mold the ego from I am an enjoyer to I am a servant. And this only Guru can do. Or those who are playing the role of multiple guru, you know, guru. One guru just manifests in different persons. But it is Guru Tattva that can turn the or dissolve the false ego. The demigods cannot do. They can give sunlight, they can give air, they can give water, they can give food, they can give all the resources, but they cannot transform the false ego. Only Guru has that Shakti. Only He is invested with that potency. In fact, even Krishna doesn't transform anyone like that. He allows everyone to go to Guru. That's a special Shakti. So then that new lifestyle of being where Krishna is at home or, you know, in the temple, the food is offered to Krishna, everything is seen as property of Krishna. This is how we now feel nourished by His presence or His glance or His touch. So very fortunate. What's our qualification? Oh, I shouldn't say our. What's mine? Nothing. Nothing. It's especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's fault is given. Even those who don't want it, they're given. Because those who want to give are very eager. Those who, usually in the world, it's the other way around. That those who want to take are very eager, and those who want to give are very careful. Right? If you want movie tickets, you want concert tickets, you want airline tickets, you want, but they are careful to give, so they ask for a higher price or this thing or that thing, or they're limited number of seats, then I'm limited this, limited that. Only in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's line, it's the other way. That those who want to take have no interest, but those who want to give are more eager. It's a very different paradigm. Anyway, you know all this, so you're just making me talk, but thank you. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.